Well, I want to mention a couple of things, especially as we begin this morning from Mark, the fourth chapter. Jesus offers this explanation as part of the parable of the sower. We are familiar with the parable of the sower from Mark, the fourth chapter. All of the synoptic writers mention the parable of the sower, and I think that's because it's such a critical thing. And we're not going to take the time this morning to go back over the parable and discuss it, but I want to take part of the parable as I begin this lesson and help it be a focal point for us as we think about what Jesus wants all of those who heard this to hear. In Mark, the fourth chapter, beginning specifically in verse 18 and 19, as Jesus is talking about those who on who the seed fell on thorny ground, I want you to listen to what he says. Now, these are the ones sown among thorns. They are the ones who hear the word, and the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things entering in choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. You know, it seems to me that this whole parable, and as I said, I'm not going to talk about the whole parable, but I just want you to think about the... Initially, it fell by the way. It didn't even take root. And there are some on whom the gospel falls, and it has no bearing at all. It just falls by the way. It's as if it never came. It never was planted. And then there's some that fall on stony ground, and Jesus talks about that. They endure for a bit, and then because of persecution or tribulation, they fall away. And most of those people are not people who are part of this assembly this morning. You're not here because it fell on some ground and you never listened to it. And you're not here this morning, most of you anyway, you're not here because you listened to it and you obeyed initially and trouble or tribulation came and you fell away and never returned. That's just not this audience. But there is ground that he talks about in this third sequence, and as part of this sequence, that's thorny ground that I think describes and could describe, if we're not careful, could very well describe us. As I think about myself in this, I would hope that I would fall into the category, the final category, and that is that it falls on good ground, and as Jesus would go on to say, it is ground that when it falls, it bears fruit. And I would hope that it not only bears fruit, but it bears the kind of fruit that Jesus wants, 100-fold. I would hope that on me, that's the way it would land, and that's the way it would take root. But the caution that I think is most concerning for me is when Jesus would say that there are some who hear the word, but the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desire for other things choke the word. Folks, I think that's a reality for us. Or better stated, I think the better way to say that is I think that can be a reality for us. I think this can easily be us, because what he says is that the word is there, but the word is being choked. It's not like it's falling into place where it doesn't affect us. I think the word affects all of us. I think it affects everyone who's in this building this morning. But there is a sense in which what Jesus said, the word begins to get choked. There are things that we do, there are things that we pursue, and it chokes that word. And when it chokes the word, what Jesus says, you become unfruitful, and I can become unfruitful. And so that's something that concerns me. That's something that concerns me first about myself. Because Jesus talks about the other things that come. Well, let me tell you right now, for all of us, there are the things that come. And so I think, in the sequence, I think this is where we have a tendency to fall. And if I'm not part of the good ground, then I have to be very careful about that. Jesus really begins this idea and talks about this idea and culminates it in this idea of fruit bearing. I love this time of year because in a very few weeks, fruit will be born. Not only fruit, but vegetables. It's exciting for me. You know, my favorite place in town to go is a farmer's market. I get excited. If somebody said you can go to Disney World or farmer's market, I'm all about farmer's market. Now, I know some of you think I'm crazy. But when I go to the farmer's market, I go to that complex on Chisholm Road for two things. I go to watch Madeline play softball, and I go to the farmer's market. And Madeline's about, she's not going to be long playing softball anymore, so now I'm going to go to farmer's market, and I'm going to walk down the aisle, and I'm going to get real excited because I'm going to see tomatoes on this side, and I'm going to see tomatoes on this side. And if you know me, I get excited about seeing tomatoes. Now, I know my life's very simple. That's okay. I don't mind if you smile about that. I have a simple life, and I'm glad to know that. But I like it because I like to see all these fruits and vegetables that are born. And so these farmers who are producers produce produce. You ever thought about that, the way those words use? It's kind of interesting. Producers produce produce. Produce are fruits and vegetables. And Jesus uses the imagery. He talks about the idea of fruit bearing because it's very easy for people to comprehend that. It's an investment that you make. It's work that you do. And because of that work you do, then things are produced and it's fruit. Jesus called it that. He used the imagery because he says people can understand that very well. And I want you to turn your Bible to Matthew 17. And just Matthew 7, and look beginning in verse 15 in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus would talk about this in reference to false prophets. He would say in verse 15, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they're ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit." And he would go on to say, "Therefore, by their fruits you will know them." Verse 20 says, he's talking about prophets and those who would speak, and he would say, you know, eventually their fruits are going to produce who they are, whether they're good or bad. Matthew 12 identifies the same thing. Jesus would identify the same thing, I think, in even another concept for us. I think it's verse 33 there in Matthew 12. He would say, "Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad, for a tree is known by its fruit." Well, we understand that concept because we see it every day. I mean, if Jesus came preaching to us today and was preaching parables and he talked about bearing good fruit or bad fruit, we'd get that. We wouldn't have to raise our hands and say, "Lord, would you repeat that? Can you give us an illustration? Can you tell us a story?" It's all over the place. It's in our backyard. It's in your backyard. Things are planted, the seed is sown, and things are produced. And what Jesus is saying, I think, in this is that God desires our hands as well as our hearts. Yes, he wants us to look at his word and to hear his word and to respond to his word with our hearts. But what our hearts should produce is effort and work and fruit bearing. And so that becomes a critically important thing. Those who are saved are those who serve. And I want you to remember that. If you're sitting here this morning and you're a saved person and yet you don't serve, I think you need to question yourself. Jesus talked about bearing fruit. But what's interesting about that to me is, in a very real sense, Jesus ties worldliness to unfruitfulness. You ever thought about that? That's what he says here. He says, if you let worldliness choke out the word, then you become unfruitful. You don't bear. You're not producing. You're not producers of spiritual produce, if you will. And I would ask this morning, have you given that idea much thought? Have you really thought about your life and this idea of fruit bearing? And is worldliness creating the problem that allows the word to choke your heart so that you're not producing much spiritually? How would you define worldliness? Well, Jesus would state it a number of ways. Paul would state it a number of ways. Colossians 3, verse 2. Paul would say, you need to set your mind on things above and not on things on the earth. And that's a principle. And I think worldliness is best described as a principle. Jesus couldn't define worldliness in every possible way and say, now, if you do this, or if you do this, or if you do this, that's worldliness. I suppose he could have done that, but we'd had to have help carrying the Bible that would have produced. So Jesus sets the idea. He establishes a principle, and he says, now, you ought to be smart enough to figure out what worldliness is. And I think a lot of times what we do is we listen to passages like Colossians 3 to set your mind on things above, and we say, well, you know, I'm spiritual, without asking, like, what does that really mean? Is that just some principle? Listen, every principle is stated so that each of us can make some application. That's the point of a principle. You give a principle so that the people who hear it can establish in their lives some application about that. And that's exactly what Jesus wants people to do. Paul would say, you set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. Well, so what is that? Well, the passage that Kenneth read, that probably you would expect me, if I'm talking about worldliness, you would expect me to talk about 1 John 2. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And he talks about the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And I would mention to you that all of those things are things that in the right hands and under the right motive and produced the right way, all are good things. Lust is just desire. All lust, when a preacher talks about lust, we're all, that's negative. And most of the time it is, and there is a very real sense in which lust is negative. But all lust is not negative. Lust is simply desire. Now, if we have the wrong kind of lust of the eyes and lust of the flesh and the wrong pride of life, we are worldly. That's what Jesus would want us to identify with, as John tells us in 1 John 2, that's not the kind of thing you need to do. You don't need to love the world like that. There are things about the world, obviously, that we love. God put us in the world to enjoy the world, but not to enjoy worldly things. I think you get the point and the difference in those things. But here's the problem. That's not easy. Kenny, don't love the world. Don't let the lust of the eyes and the lust of the flesh and the pride of life, don't let that affect you like it affects most people. That's really what John is saying. And that's what Jesus would be saying as well, and that's what Paul would be saying. All of that is the idea of don't let it affect you adversely, because if it does, you're not going to produce the kind of fruit that you need to produce. It's going to the word's going to get choked. That's our tendency, you see. Our tendency is not letting the seed fall by the wayside, or that when something happens bad in our lives, we quit the Lord. That's not our tendency. That's not it for us. Most of us, anyway. Now, there may be some here that's happened to, but I'm saying most of us fall into this category I'm talking about this morning. The things that affect us, it just chokes the word. And because it's got that stranglehold on us and it just continues to do what it does to us, it's not that we're bad people. We just don't do what we ought to be doing sometimes. We don't find ourselves producing the kind of fruit that we ought to produce. We find ourselves pursuing the things that don't really matter, not in the long run. That's our problem, you see. At least that's my problem, I think, primarily. Worldliness is being so wedded to the world that we pay little attention to the world to come. And I'm going to tell you why we do that, because it's hard not to. Because we don't live in the world to come. We live in the world here and now. We live in the world here and now that offers all of these things that we can accumulate and we can have and we can pursue. That's why we do what we do. That's why we spend so much time doing those things. And when we stop and when we meditate and when we think about it and when we evaluate ourselves, most of us probably, we don't feel too good about it. Because we know we're too pursuant of things that pursued too much are wrong. I thought I'd think about that. I won't say that. Am I right about that? That's the problem with most of us. It's not that we've foregone the word or that we've abandoned the word. So that's not it. We're still in it. It's just choking us. We need to let those things, those cares, and those things that choke it, we need to let go of those things so that word is free to do in us what it's supposed to do. Some think of worldliness as those sins that violate some conservative social value that we've had in the world prior to this day and age. And I think that's probably true. But even these conservative values, as we like to call them, these things that, you know, we've been opposed to and the world generally has been opposed to for so long. And listen, folks, those things are fast disappearing. They're fast disappearing. You know, we talk about, I remember preachers back when I was a boy, and they'd, you know, come in, we'd have a meeting and we'd be talking about drinking and gambling and dancing and cussing and cheating and smoking and anything else that ends in I-N. G. And I get that. And I'm going to be honest with you. There's not enough preaching about drinking and smoking and gambling and dancing and cussing. And you know what I'm talking about. I'm against that. I'll just tell you. We need to be preaching more about that. I need to be preaching more about that. We need to be people who evaluate the Lord and what He had to say and say, you know, is that really what I ought to do? But there's more to worldliness, folks, than dancing and gambling and cheating and cussing and drinking. There's more to it than that. And I'm going to just as a side say, you know, there are things about those things that I just mentioned. That's, you're probably sitting there this morning and go, well, there are variables in reference to all those things. And I would even agree with that. You know, we talk about cussing or cursing, if you want to say it the polite way, or profanity. You know, there are words that, there's probably words that some people use that you'd hear them and you'd go, I can't believe you said that. Well, they're just differences. There are euphemisms. There's all sorts of things, you know. I said, shut up one time. I thought my dad was going to knock me in the middle of the next week. Shut up. And the next week I said, heck. And that was really bad. He did knock me in the middle of the next week for that word. I'm just telling you, there's different. And I'd love to have conversations with about any of those things that I mentioned. I think that those are probably things that we need to discuss from a biblical perspective. But folks, that's not just worldliness. Those things that we're talking about are not just worldliness. Fundamentally, worldliness is a problem of the heart. And it affects and afflicts all who are motivated primarily by worldly motives. And sometimes it's the outward appearance or the outward statement that we so focus in on and define worldliness as. And despite outward appearances, it may be that the drunk or the prostitute or the one that in our minds, well, that person's obviously a sinner. You know, it may be that they're a lot closer to God than we are. I think we need to be realistic about that. In truth, their hearts may not be as tightly to the world as those of us who may be involved in more, as we say, respectable sins. Like being too tied to the world and the things of the world. Turn over to Luke 12. I want you to listen and follow it in your Bibles, if you would, to Luke 12. This is beginning in verse 16. He spoke a parable to them. This is Jesus. The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul shall be required of you. Then whose will these things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. You know what's interesting about this? This guy wasn't a sex addict. He wasn't out spending his money on prostitutes. That's not what he was doing. He wasn't an addict. He wasn't involved, evidently at least. He wasn't involved in pornography. He didn't look at it every day. He wasn't so focused on that and addicted to that's what he did. He evidently wasn't an alcoholic. Evidently he didn't go around using profanity. He was not a filthy mouth, as we like to say. But he was what Jesus called him, and that is, he says, you're a fool. He says, you're a fool. Because he was pursuing something that many times, we are guilty of. And I think we need to be very willing, as our brother this morning said, to examine ourselves. Because this passage, this parable in Luke 12, about a man who was not in a Victorian sense involved in all these sins that we sometimes call sins that we like to talk about, and that when I was a boy it seemed like every class was about. But yet, this aspect of worldliness, which is materialism, can eat us up if we're not careful. It can choke us to the point where we begin to bear less fruit and we don't really involve ourselves in those things which are meaningful, the most meaningful things. Materialism basically is the idea that spiritual realities don't exist, at least not practically or objectively. Maybe don't exist is too strong a statement. But the Bible doesn't subscribe to materialism. It just doesn't lend itself to saying that's what a person should do. And I will tell you, and you know this, I'm going to say it, and you're going to say, Kenny, that's right. You know, judging from what most people do, am I right about this? Judging from what most people do, most people think it's all about what you have. It's just simply about materialism. That's what life is. There are very few people who are as interested in spiritual things as I think the Bible teaches that a person ought to be. We're giving some thought to that today. We're giving some attention to that today by coming together. And I think part of why we're coming together is because we understand something Jesus said in Matthew 16 that we're going to look at in just a moment. But there's very few people really in our world who look at spiritual things and go, that really is the most important thing. And I will tell you, the concern that I think each of us needs to have of ourselves is that we're not that way. Lives that are driven by materialism are hollow and shallow. They are not full and deep. I would like for you to consider this for a moment. I'm going to read this as I have it in my outline because I want to make sure I state it the right way. Whether we face the fact or not, our hearts were made to experience much more than anything the material world can provide. Don't you agree with that? Having more, and I will tell you that Beth and I have accumulated some things in our life. We have been blessed materially. As many, if not most of you, maybe not all, maybe all of you in most ways have been blessed materially. But I can honestly tell you that when those things are acquired, I don't feel better about myself. It may produce some indifferent feeling. That's not to say that I feel worse. But there's nothing inherently good about obtaining things that makes me feel better about myself. That's just not the way those things are intended to do. As a matter of fact, quite the opposite is true, I think. Maybe it's not the opposite, but a different angle, that is. It's when I do those things that are spiritual, it's when I'm bearing that kind of fruit. That's when I feel best about myself. It's when I feel like I've delivered a good lesson, or I've talked with somebody about a spiritual need, or I've treated my wife better. Or I've prayed more often. Or I've asked God to forgive me of what I continue to do that I ought not do. It's when I do that, that's when I feel best about myself. Not when I go out and buy something. Not when I obtain something. Or not when I accumulate more things. That kind of attitude where that's what makes me, if that's what makes you feel good about yourself, well, you do have a problem. And if you're a Christian and that's what's happening, what Jesus is saying is, I'm talking about you here. You're letting that kind of stuff choke the fruit bearing that you ought to be doing. That really amounts to something. I love this quote. Materialism is organized emptiness of the spirit. Isn't that right? Materialism is organized emptiness of the spirit. I love that. I wish I'd have thought about that. Matter of fact, it was anonymous. I think I'll put my name to that. Well, that'd be wrong. But isn't that right, folks? Things of material will never fulfill what is needed by man's spirit. If you're sitting here this morning, you're saying, Kenny, I'm hearing what you're saying. You know, here's what's happened. In my life, that's what I've done. That's what I've done. Let me tell you something. You can change that. You can change that with a decision. Isn't that great? You've lived all your life accumulating and having these things and wanting these and possessing and owning and buying. You've spent all your life doing that, and you say, you know, now I know that's not what I ought to do. Okay, make a decision to say that's not going to be that way anymore. This is not a hard decision. It may be hard emotionally to make, but it's not a hard decision to change. That's the whole point of Jesus talking about it. And only spiritual things and things of the Spirit, things that don't choke out a spiritual word. It's those kind of things when those other things are released, then it's the focus that says, you know, it's the spiritual. Boy, I get that. I get that. And then it's the allowance, and it's the decision and the allowance to say, not only do I get it, but that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to let that happen in my life. Everything changes then. Everything changes then. That's why the hours spent in spiritual activity, whether collectively like we're doing today or privately, bring most so much joy to a Christian. Do you feel better after you spend an hour studying the Word of God, or do you feel better riding a roller coaster? Seriously. What's the advantage? Is there one advantage that's better? Sure there is. One brings a thrill, a momentary thrill. The other brings eternal life. But that's so hard because we let that stuff choke us out. And if you don't agree with that, then I don't think you understand Jesus' words in Matthew 16 when he would say this: what shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for soul? I love those two questions. They're rhetorical questions. If I could talk about those every sermon, I would, because I think that's such a critical thing for us to understand. And I want to make this point. I made it last week in Houston as I was talking to about 50 young people, most of whom are high school students, and I wanted to really make this point to them. And I stress this point, I'm going to stress it to you this morning. Jesus said, what shall it profit a man? Listen to very carefully this. If he gains the whole world. We're not talking about a piece of the world. We're not talking about part of Florence here, folks. We're not talking about an extra this or an extra that. He's not talking about that. Jesus said, what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world? Have you ever thought about that? He's making it as good for you as he can. He's trying to give you every possible benefit. If you gain the entire world, if you looked at the world and said, owned by Kenny Moore, got it all, and yet you go to hell, what value is that? You put on my tombstone, Kenny Moore owned the whole world, but what's going to happen with that? The world's going to end, and that tombstone is going to be blown up. It's going to be melted. It's going to be destroyed. So, you see that? If the best I can do is have a monument made for me, and there have been a lot of monuments made, there are a lot of people who have a monument. Beth and I drove back from Texas a week or so ago in the middle of the night, not in the middle of the night, early part of the night. We're driving down the interstate. We looked up the road. She said, what is that? I said, that looks like a statue. And we got closer. We looked like we were going to run into it. Folks, I'm not talking about statue. I'm not even talking about a statue. I'm talking about a statue. You go on the interstate in Huntsville, Alabama. I don't know what it is. I think it's an interstate. It's a four lane, it's a freeway. You go up there, and in Huntsville, Alabama, there's a statue of Sam Houston. That's the biggest thing I've ever seen in terms of statue. It's the biggest thing I've ever seen. And as important as all you Texas people think Sam Houston is to you, I kind of like the guy myself, even though I never met him. But, I mean, he was a freedom fighter, man. I mean, he put Texas on the map, literally put it on the map. But that statue, when the Lord comes back, it's going to be gone. I don't care how big the statue of Sam Houston is. It's going to be gone. And I don't care what my tombstone says. I don't care if I did own the whole world. It's going to be gone. Those two questions in Matthew 16, those are easily answered questions. You know, if you'll stop long enough, and if you can get people in the world to stop long enough to just answer that question, what's most important to you? How important are all these things that you're accumulating? How is important that to you? How important is success that Patrick was talking about there? How important is that kind of success that we all, let me rephrase that, that many people in the world think is really success? How important is that kind of thing to you? Every one of those people who are pursuing those things, if they would stop long enough to really think about, okay, when I die, whose things will these be? The only conclusion they're going to have is, I have no idea. There's nobody whose body's lying in a casket, whose spirit's going back to God, who's trying to figure out, what am I going to do with my stuff? No, nobody figuring that out. And while I've never been there, not yet anyway, and I will one day, unless the Lord comes back before I die, there isn't one soul who waits in the realm of the dead who would deny the words of Jesus when he said, what shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Yet most on this side of eternity won't stop long enough to even think about it. And in the words of the 1980 TV star, Mr. T, I pity the fool. Those aren't Mr. T's words originally. That was the Lord's words. So if you put these three ideas together, this fruit-bearing idea and worldliness and materialism, you put all that together and then make this decision. I'm not going to let worldliness and materialism choke out what the Word's supposed to do in my life. It's got to bear fruit. When worldliness and materialism choke the Word, we become unfruitful. So we fight all that by staying focused spiritually and using these material or worldly things for the greater spiritual good. Folks, don't misunderstand the point. I'm not against material goods and things that the world has to offer me. Neither is the Lord. Listen, if I'm against that, I got some serious yard selling to do. And you do too. I'm not saying that that's wrong, and I don't think the Lord's saying that's wrong. I think the Lord, though, is saying if that doesn't work toward a greater good, then you got a problem. And as the passage in Luke 12 says, Jesus would say, you are a fool if you lay up treasure for yourself, and in the words of Jesus himself, and you aren't rich toward God. Don't be a fool. Don't be a fool. May God help us toward that end. Remember a while ago when I said it's just a decision? The difference is a decision. That's right. Now, it's not just a verbal decision. It's not just, that's what I'm going to do. Because all of us can do that. There's a lot of verbal decisions that are made. I know a lot of people say, you know, I'm going to serve the Lord, and they do. They may make a verbal decision, and within 24 hours, that decision's gone by the way. It's not that kind of decision. It's a decision you need to make verbally. You need to reason inside your heart and decide that's what you're going to do. But it's deeper than that, you see. It's then living the life that is representative of the decision. That's what you have to do. That's the difficulty. That's what Jesus is talking about. But it can be done. And it must be done, folks. If you need to start that today, if you need to begin that by giving your life to Christ and saying, enough of all this junk, enough of all this about me, what I need to do is live my life for Him, then you've come to the right place and you've heard the right words from His book. What you need to do is decide to do that verbally and then go out and live it. If we can help you with that, we want to do that. Make it known as we stand and as we sing.